It is Monday, October 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, controversy continues over the new investigation concerning Hillary Clinton's emails. South Korea's president finds herself embroiled in a political scandal. And on Halloween, we look at the creepy clown craze. It's all ahead. National polls here in the United States show Democrat Hillary Clinton with a narrow edge over Republican Donald Trump in the last week of the presidential campaign. However, the reopened investigation into Clinton's emails from her tenure as Secretary of State has added an uncertain element to their last dash for the White House. Several national surveys Monday showed Clinton with a 1-3 percentage point advantage over Trump, the real estate mogul making his first run for elected office. Other surveys still show Clinton with a more likely path to victory, which would make her the country's first female president. The long campaign was jarred again when Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey announced the new email probe to look at thousands of emails found on the computer of the estranged husband of a key Clinton aide, Huma Abedin. Richard Painter is a professor at the University of Minnesota Law School and the chief White House ethics lawyer under former President George W. Bush. He's filed a complaint against the FBI under the Hatch Act. He spoke to VOA.
Well, the Hatch Act prohibits executive branch officials from using their official position to influence an election. That is not permitted, to use your official position to influence an election. And Director Comey allowed the FBI to be manipulated by the members of the House Oversight Committee into releasing this information shortly before the election so they could just post it on the internet. And furthermore, the letter is misleading because it does not appear that the FBI has any new information about Secretary Clinton. They didn't even have a search warrant to search the computer at the time they sent the letter. So the letter is misleading.
Jeffrey Skelly is Media Relations Coordinator for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. I asked him how this new email investigation could impact the presidential election.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, $64,000 question. You pick your game show. The thing is that the early polling data on this is mixed. There are some state-level polls that still showed Clinton ahead in some states that she needs to win, like Pennsylvania and Colorado, that were taken fully after this news initially broke. There have been a couple national polls that have shown essentially no change from their previous numbers that were taken after. But at the same time, there are also some polls that show, you know, at least some tightening in the race, and that Trump is now down by, say, one when they had Clinton up three or four. So it's a mixed bag. So I think it's unclear exactly what this means from a polling standpoint. I do think it's worth noting that we don't have a lot of prior comparisons to this. Obviously, there aren't a lot of presidential elections overall anyway in terms of sample size to work with. But you only have a few sort of October surprises, as we often call them, from the past. And there is some evidence that they have perhaps cost one candidate a point or two. And, you know, maybe that's what's happening here as well. We'll have to see. It seems like the response to Comey's announcement has, of course, sort of made the partisans batten down the hatches on one side, the Democrats, and then on the other side, Republicans are sort of running wild with speculation about what it all means. So, and now you've got Senator Harry Reid, for example, suggesting that Comey may have violated the Hatch Act. And so, I guess a good question that we can't really answer is: could the main effect of this be to actually sort of solidify partisan views? You know, maybe that might be good news for Clinton. since Comey has come under a lot of criticism for this. But at the same time, I think a worry for the Clinton campaign has to be, does this move some of the lower information, undecided types who were sort of, had maybe moved into her camp, does this move some of them back onto the fence or over to third-party candidates? Or are they, you know, perhaps are they lower, less likely to turn out now because maybe they don't want to vote for Trump, but maybe they don't want to vote for Clinton either? I think that has to be the Clinton campaign's biggest concern. And, you know, that really the only way that Trump can win this election is if there is lower turnout and the turnout and that that where the turnout drops off from recent elections is among groups of voters who are much more likely to vote for Clinton than Trump, you know, thinking of young voters, non-white voters, and the like. As, yeah, we don't, you know, we don't really have any evidence that suggests any of that, but obviously Election Day isn't until November 8th. And so really the only thing we can look at is early voting data, but early voting data can be something of a Rorschach test. It can sort of be whatever you want it to be in terms of what it means, at least in a lot of states. So I think the main answer is that there is no answer at this point to what it all means, and there's just a lot of things that we can look at and get mixed signals as to whether it's good news for one side or bad news for one side at this point.
This development also, it kind of shines a spotlight on Hillary Clinton. Say a couple of weeks ago, following the that tape, Access Hollywood
right.
tape, there was so much comment about Trump and his attitudes towards women and that kind of thing. You know, what he'd been involved in the past. This sort of looks potentially, you know, at her past, and in a way sort of eases some of that pressure on Trump.
Yes, there's been a definite trend in this campaign where the candidate that is in the news more has tended to do worse in the polls. But mainly because most of the news around these two candidates has been negative. So if one is in the news more than the other, it's usually about something that is negative.
That's Jeffrey Skelly. He's Media Relations Coordinator for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Well, I'm joined now by social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So I'm sure, Andrew, on social media, there's lots of reaction to all this.
No surprise there. There is indeed a lot of reaction. Everything from anger at Anthony Weiner, coming from especially Democrats, to anger at FBI Director James Comey about the timing of this release. And calls to reopen the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, and kind of indicative of the two sides battling back and forth. Earlier today, we had trending at the same time, hashtag Hillary for prison, and Attorney General Eric Holder's name. Now, Eric Holder has come out with a number of Justice Department officials and condemned these actions. So you see kind of both sides at play on social media. And I just want to read quickly this tweet from Glenn Thrush of Politico, because I thought this was great when I stumbled upon this morning. He said, "Of course, 2016 would end with Clinton shouting, 'The game is rigged,' and Trump solemnly defending Washington bureaucrats." So as I've said on the show before, a week in politics is like a lifetime, and we have 8 days to go. So a lot has already shifted, and a lot, I'm sure, is yet to come in the next 8 days. But switching to a perhaps lighter topic, if not a scary one, something scary that's not just the election. Today is, of course, Halloween, so lots of people on social media sharing pictures of their costumes and favorite candy. I know you're going to be talking about the scary clowns a little later. That's a
yeah.
concern for a lot of people. And even some of the social networks are getting in on the fun. Facebook has rolled out some Halloween-themed reaction buttons, so when you click like or haha or love, it's all a goblin and ghost-themed. And they are allowing people to add a virtual mask to their Facebook Live videos. So if you take a Facebook Live of your face, you can put a virtual mask on there. So you can celebrate Halloween even virtually, even if you're not going out trick-or-treating.
Yeah, that way you don't have to get hot under the mask.
Yes, or see any scary clowns.
That's right. Okay. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. Venezuela's president meets the leaders of the country's opposition. Italian authorities assess damage in Norcia after a 6.6 magnitude quake. The Lebanese parliament elects a new president, ending a power vacuum, and deals from Japan signal the Philippines is shifting to a multi-country foreign policy. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. The final bits of data gathered by NASA's New Horizons spacecraft during its July 2015 flyby of Pluto were received this week by its Mission Operations Center at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland. More than 50 gigabytes of observational data was stored on the spacecraft's digital recorders since the flyby. The data has been sent back to Earth in increments over a 15-month period. Mission officials say part of an observation sequence of Pluto and its largest moon, Charon, were included in the final data feed. Traveling at light speed, the data made the nearly 50 billion kilometer trip in about 5 hours. After conducting a final verification of all received data, mission team members will clear space on the spacecraft's digital recorders to make room for new data that will be gathered in its upcoming exploration of the Kuiper Belt. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new and scary way to celebrate Halloween. South Korean President Park Geun-hye has vowed not to let a growing political crisis of confidence in her administration undermine the nation's national security. Amid the political turmoil, the South Korean military this week began its annual exercise involving the Army, Navy, and Air Force. However, revelations regarding an influence-peddling scandal involving a longtime friend of the president have seriously damaged Park's hold on power and credibility with the public. I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul about the controversy.
It has been remarkable, the South Korean media and public reaction to the scandal. People, I think, living outside of Korea don't quite understand, or at least didn't when this crisis first emerged, because it entails a friend of the president who was using the president's name to solicit funds and allegedly embezzled these funds, and she also was helping the president secretly with her speeches and policy. And in some places in the world, that would be a minor thing, but the reaction and the outrage was just amazing here, where you've had tens of thousands of people protesting in the street over the weekend. You've had a growing number of legislators and other officials calling for her resignation because this totally turns upside down their perception of President Park Geun-hye as this uncorruptible, incorruptible force.
This friend of President Park, Choi Soon-sil, was she, you know, was her presence known? Was her, you know, the closeness of her friendship to President Park known before this?
There were indications in some circles, but not in the general public. She has been a longtime friend of President Park, and there had been reports that early on, before President Park ran for president, there were concerns about her influence, and she had let powerful circles know around her that she was not going to be influenced by this person. It all goes back to the 1970s, and this is where it gets very fascinating and the allegations take on a nature that, for me, is hard to comprehend, the alleged level of control that the Choi family has had over a young Park Geun-hye. So back in the 1970s, her father was President Park Chung-hee, and he had taken over control of the country through a coup. He was an authoritarian leader, had led the country in the end for 18 years. Park's mother was killed by an assassin who was trying to kill the sitting president. Choi's father, Choi Tae-min, he was a kind of a religious cult figure who somehow became friends with and a mentor to President Park during the time she lost her mother. And there were concerns during those early years that he was having not a positive influence, that he was kind of a controlling influence over her. And there were reports during the last years of her father's rule that Choi Tae-min was using the family name to solicit funds for foundations. He was creating, and the money was going to him, and he was enriching himself through this process. His daughter, Choi Soon-sil, also became close friends with President Park, but this all kind of faded into the background over the years, and it didn't become apparent until early in September when the South Korean National Assembly was conducting an audit of government agencies and kind of uncovered that Choi Soon-sil was allegedly raising money up to like $68 million worth of money for sports foundations, but that this money allegedly did not go to these foundations, but they went to her and her daughter. So it becomes a very convoluted circle that was created, and people were just totally outraged by this.
Yeah, and I've heard that apparently Choi Soon-sil, she apparently played a part in writing President Park's speeches. And then in addition, Choi worked to get her daughter admitted to a very prestigious university.
Yes, all those things. That's where there are also allegations of influence peddling, where she used her influence as friend of the president to get her daughter into a good school. And President Park was very comfortable with Choi, and President Park did say early on in her presidency, she did send some speeches to Choi for her review because she was a trusted friend who helped her with, quote, difficulties in the past, unquote. What we're learning from documents that were on a discarded computer tablet that was found at Choi's residence before Choi left the country in September, that the collaboration was much more extensive, and in fact that the allegations that people are making, and that it was not a collaboration so much as Choi directing kind of her as a mentor, directing Park on what she should be doing with foreign policy and how she should be taking a hardline stance against North Korea. And Choi is not an elected official. And Choi had supposedly told people in her circle that the reason that she was supporting a very hardline position against North Korea because spirits spoke to her and told her that within 2 years, the North Korean regime would collapse.
That's VOA correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul. This is VOA.
Tuesday, November 8th, the American people choose a new president. VOA's live election night coverage begins at 2200 hours Universal Time. As events unfold, we'll bring you the finale of this historic campaign from Washington and VOA correspondents across the United States and around the world. Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, you'll hear comprehensive coverage until the last speech is done. It's America Votes 2016 on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. A creepy clown craze has taken America by storm in recent months, triggered by phantom clown sightings across the country. Similar sightings happened in the mid-80s and early 90s. Since then, no one has capitalized on the fear of the clown face more than the movie industry, as Penelope Pulu reports.
They're here.
Who can forget the original Poltergeist? Directed by Tobe Hooper and written by Steven Spielberg, the 1982 horror flick became a classic for its unprecedented storyline and chilling atmosphere in a quaint suburb where restless ghosts haunt the house of a middle-class family and kidnap one of the children. In one of the most unnerving scenes, a creepy toy clown comes to life. The scary clown is embodied by Batman's arch-nemesis, the Joker, who wreaks havoc in Gotham City. The first time the character appeared on TV was about 50 years ago, but Jack Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker was more menacing in the 1989 film as he taunted Batman and planned to poison thousands of civilians. The same role was reprised even more memorably by the late Heath Ledger in Chris Nolan's 2008 The Dark Knight.
Hi.
Nolan and Ledger go a step further in depicting the evil clown. The Joker no longer hides behind the jovial clown mask or heavy makeup. His face is mutilated into a contorted clown grimace. That vision has inspired other more twisted interpretations of evil clowns. One of them is the 2016 horror film Clown. To entertain his son's birthday party, a father dons a clown suit he finds in his attic, only to discover he cannot take it off. The dad loses his mind and turns murderous as the suit starts growing into his skin.
Two.
The recently released Tyler Perry's Boo, a Madea Halloween, incorporates the scary clown theme but infuses it with humor by portraying the mishaps of Madea, a big busty woman, as she faces up to ghouls and clowns while keeping a watchful eye on teens during Halloween.
And that report, all about creepy clowns and on Halloween, by VOA's Penelope Pulu. Well, that's our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, announced on October 12th a new program in Tanzania that will increase access and quality of education for adolescent girls. Concurrently, the USAID mission in Tanzania announced that it will sign a memorandum of cooperation on the Let Girls Learn initiative with Global Affairs Canada, or GAC. This agreement builds on USAID and GAC's existing collaboration through the Education Development Partner Group, which coordinates with the government of Tanzania's Ministry of Education, Science, and Technology to develop the Education Sector Development Plan and education policies. The new agreement commits both donor agencies to work together to identify and outline potential areas for joint cooperation to advance access to quality education, foster an enabling environment for adolescent girls' education, and engage and equip girls to be agents of change. Since the launch of the Let Girls Learn initiative, USAID has invested over $600 million on Let Girls Learn programs in 13 countries across Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In Tanzania and Malawi, the first two Let Girls Learn priority countries, the U.S. government will invest up to $25 million through the Let Girls Learn Challenge Fund to work with an array of partners on innovative approaches to improving girls' education. In Tanzania, World Education is the apparent awardee for the Wache Wasomi, or Let Them Learn program, which will capitalize on long-standing USAID efforts to empower young women. In partnership with Restless Development, WGBH Educational Foundation, and the Campaign for Female Education, or Wache Wasomi, will increase enrollment and retention of adolescent girls aged 13 to 19 and improve community perceptions about the value of educating girls in select districts of the Arusha and Mara regions. This new activity grew out of a USAID workshop held in Dar es Salaam in May, where development experts, donors, and Tanzanian and Malawian government officials co-designed innovative solutions to help adolescent girls attain a high-quality education. USAID Tanzania is proud to be part of Let Girls Learn, which complements our strategy to advance Tanzania's socioeconomic status in large part by empowering women and youth, said USAID Mission Director Sharon Cromer. We are committed to improving the lifelong learning skills of Tanzanians, particularly among vulnerable groups like adolescent girls who face many barriers to education.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.